USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Judge Gorsuch has outstanding legal skills, a brilliant mind, tremendous discipline, and has earned bipartisan support.
President Donald Trump last night nominating appeals court Judge Neil Gorsuch to the U.S. Supreme Court. He holds the belief that the U.S. Constitution should be interpreted as it would have been when it was written. Political expert Dr. Sean Foreman of Barry University says the 49-year-old checks all the boxes for conservatives.
He's a strong social conservative. He's a textualist in many ways, just in the mold of Antonin Scalia, whose seat he'll be taking on the court.
Many Senate Democrats say they're not going to make it so easy, though, for Gorsuch to win confirmation. Those Senate Democrats are also delaying committee votes on President Trump's nominees for Treasury and Health Secretaries. This is USA Radio News.
Allergy sufferers are hearing a lot of numbers these days about symptoms and relief. But the number sufferers want most is zero, as in zero nasal allergy symptoms. And nothing gets you closer to zero than Nasacort. Because unlike antihistamines that stop only one cause of your allergy symptoms, Nasacort stops more. And stopping more gets you closer to zero. For 24-hour relief of your worst nasal allergy symptoms, including congestion, choose Nasacort. It stops more of what makes you miserable. Use as directed.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
The weather for Hunterdon County, it is currently 47 degrees. Humidity is at 42. And let me see. We are in our new radio station setting, so be patient with me. Okay, it is partly sunny today, again with a high near 47. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 27. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 39. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low around 18. Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 31. Sunny on Saturday and partly sunny on Sunday. Both will be in the mid-30s for the weekend. So it looks like we're having a cool but nice weekend ahead of us. So I want to welcome you to Counselors Chat. I am Ruth Altamura-Roll, your host for today's program, and I'm hoping that you're hearing me okay. Just not sure if I think so. I think the mic is on. Anyway, Counselors Chat is a show that I have been putting on now for probably a little over 5 years, and it's really about talking about counseling, perspectives of counseling, and good mental health. And one of the goals is to remove the stigma for people who want to seek out counseling. It's also about educating the public in terms of what a licensed professional counselor, or who is a licensed professional counselor. So I'm glad to hear the mic is on. Thank you. I did get a response from someone that said it was on, so that's great. Again, back to why I do Counselors Chat. Again, it's about promoting good mental health, removing the stigma for people who are struggling with issues. And it doesn't mean that you're necessarily struggling with what we sort of term mental health issues, like depression or anxiety or OCD. It could be addiction, eating disorders, many different things. Sometimes just struggling within your relationship, and you want some couples counseling or relationship counseling. It might be dealing with issues of grief and loss, just some things like that. So mental health counseling is about many things, and as a mental health counselor, I need to be educated in many things. So today my topic is about codependency, and also about the Cartman drama triangle. And I think the Cartman drama triangle, which I will explain in a little bit, is a really good description of what happens within codependency. Generally speaking, someone who is codependent has a tendency to caretake other people. One of my favorite books that it's been out for many years now, however, it's still the top-selling book in the area of codependency, is called Codependent No More by Melody Beattie, and I will be making some references out of the book this morning, because codependency is about taking care of yourself, or let me backtrack. It's about not taking care of yourself, and it's about taking care of others at the expense of yourself. And it's something that many of us do. We become so absorbed in other people's problems that we don't even have time to identify or solve our own. And we're very deeply troubled about other people's problems, and we want to take care of them, that we forget how to take care of ourselves, even if we've even learned. We may not have even learned. And we try to control events and people around us because we feel everything around us is out of control. And we feel super responsible for so much because we think that other people are not being responsible for themselves or for other things. Now, I just paraphrased what was on the back of the book. Again, Codependent No More. So it's a great book. I'm going to definitely suggest people to refer to it. And, you know, anymore we hear the word codependency, and it gets bantered around a lot. And codependency was originally coined around addiction. So we think of addiction and people who are dependent on drugs and alcohol or gambling or workaholism or many, many different things. It basically means that the person who is dependent has someone who is enabling them, caretaking them, or rescuing them. The codependent almost has a need to be needed, equal to the alcoholic, and I'll use the alcoholic's need for alcohol. The codependent has a need to be needed. And what ends up happening is it creates this cycle or this system within a relationship that oftentimes, which I will get to, has a lot of dramatic circumstances around it. So what are some symptoms, you might say, of codependency? Other than, as I was saying, directly related to alcohol. Well, oftentimes, codependency has a base in shame or low self-esteem. So if I am the person that's codependent, I may not feel good enough about myself, or I'm comparing myself a lot to others who I may think have high self-esteem. The thing that's tricky about self-esteem is that it's really based on how I think about myself. And now, I think last week I talked about shame and toxic shame. Toxic shame, I think there's something fundamentally wrong with me. And that has a direct effect on myself. How can I feel good about myself if I think there's something fundamentally wrong with me? So a deep sense of toxic shame is often connected to low self-esteem. So oftentimes we may feel unlovable or inadequate. These are feelings of shame. We might feel very guilty and strive for perfectionism and demand perfectionism in everything and everyone else so that I don't feel bad about myself. I think one of the key aspects then that go with that is people pleasing. I want everyone to like me and love me and approve of me, so I need to please people. I want to make sure that I'm taking care of them and that I care about them and that they know that. And generally thinking, codependents don't usually think they have a choice. And saying no, okay, which is something codependents struggle with, causes a great deal of anxiety, because if I say no and you're angry with me as a consequence or disappointed with me, I almost can't handle that. And so I will go out of my way and self-sacrifice to accommodate you so that I don't feel my shame. So I'm going to take care of you so I don't feel bad about me. You know how that works? That's the people pleasing. The other thing with codependency is we have a tendency to have poor boundaries. And you know, I talk a lot about boundaries and limits. And a boundary is really important. A boundary lets me know where I end and you begin. We all have boundaries is a necessary aspect of living. A boundary means I am not going to have my door open to anybody and everybody. Whoever wants to come, who's walking down the street, they can come and they can flop at my house and just eat my food. I don't even need to know who they are. Anybody. A codependent is someone who will be on the elevator and see this person and they go, "Oh, you poor thing, let me take you home with me and take care of you." Someone who's codependent says, "Oh, look at all those poor homeless puppies," and takes them all in, only to find that they have diseases and now we're all infected. Okay? So that's the poor boundary. We don't have good limits. We don't know when enough is enough. Sometimes codependents have very rigid boundaries and tend to build walls and withdraw, and making it hard to get to know people. End up feeling very lonely and isolated. A boundary is flexible. However, the person with the boundary is the one that's in charge of who I let in and who I let out. So in other words, I invite people into my home that I feel safe with, that I know that chances are I meet somebody and I don't really know them. Maybe it's somebody I meet through work and we kind of hit it off a little bit. I don't generally say, "Why don't you come over my house for a sleepover?" I will say, "Hey, why don't we get together for lunch? Want to meet for a cup of coffee?" let's go out someplace in public where it's safe for both of us and get to know each other. Same thing with dating. There's a huge tendency. Sometimes people say, oh, yes, pick me up at 8 and don't be late. But the thing is that I'm showing you where I live. You're a stranger to me. What I need to do is I need to say, oh, you know what, we're going to meet at Panera Bread for a coffee. I want to get to know you. I want to see if I can trust you. This is what we do when we are working at having good boundaries. Doesn't mean I'm not going to ever invite you to my house. It just means I want to get to know you a little bit. Because if I find out you're a shady character, I don't know if I want you in my house. If I'm comfortable with you and I find you to be trustworthy, then yeah, absolutely. And again, sometimes people may have rigid boundaries. I don't want to know anybody. I'm perfectly happy all by myself. That's also not where we want to go. We want to be flexible. Codependency, and this is where the drama kicks in. Okay, codependency tends to be reactive. Okay, so what that means, reactive, is we don't think the consequences through. Again, it's having those poor boundaries. We react to everyone's feelings. We react to everyone's thoughts. We get focused on things that, well, I guess one of the best ways to explain it, and one of the only times that we do talk about good sense of boundaries in our countries on an airplane. There's a problem. The oxygen masks drop down. Okay, so if I'm practicing codependency, I go, oh my God, the oxygen. You put yours on, and I'm running up and down the aisle trying to help everybody get their oxygen mask on, and I fall in a faint from lack of oxygen. I'm being reactive instead of responsive. So when I respond to something, I tend to think it through. I put the oxygen mask on myself, keep my head about me, and then I help the people around me. Someone who is codependent can be very caretaking. Again, that has to do with boundaries. So, yesterday, pretty sad situation. A neighbor of mine has some issues with her 12-year-old daughter. She's had several seizures. She's currently at St. Peter's being monitored. And my first reaction was, I'll make dinner for you, anything you need. She's got 4 kids all together. I'm like, I'll help out, whatever. Now, as the day went on, I thought, it's still something that I can do. I have clients. I had to do some paperwork for my mom, all kinds of things like that. And I said, you know what, before I just show up, okay, caretaking, before I just show up with all this food, let me just make sure, okay, so it's a little bit of step back, make sure that's what she needs me to do right now. And so I called. They were at the hospital. I said, I'm still, you know, if you still need me to get dinner. She says, no, you know what, not tonight. Not tonight. She said, my parents are there. We've got it all under control. Okay? So if I just continued to go on that place of being reactive, I would have shown up with dinner. Then the other thing, too, that happens is that I may then feel hurt because I told her I was going to bring dinner and she already had dinner, her parents brought dinner and didn't she know I was going to, that's, hear the drama. Okay, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. But the thing is that sometimes caretaking is not necessary. Is it natural to feel empathy and sympathy for someone? Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that's healthy. However, that doesn't mean that I cross a boundary, that I become reactive, and that I caretake. The other person may not really want my help or need my help. And then as a consequence, I may end up feeling hurt and rejected and say, fine, you don't want my help, I'm not helping anymore. So I retreat. So none of that really works very well. That's all codependency. The caretaking, we keep trying to help and fix another person, even if they don't want it. We try and help. We're angry when they don't take our advice. It causes drama. It affects our self-worth and their self-worth. And a schism in a relationship. So I'm going to just take a quick commercial break, and I'm going to be back and talk a little bit more about codependency and the Cartman drama triangle. I am Ruth Altamira Roll, your host for Counselor's Chat.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntonChamberRadio.com app today.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamira Roll, your host for today's program, and I'm talking about codependency and the Cartman drama triangle. So before I continue on with some of the aspects of codependency, I am going to talk to you about the Cartman drama triangle because I did mention it, didn't I? Stephen Cartman is the person who came up with the Cartman drama triangle back in the 60s. And it's a very interesting, I'm going to use the word diagram, because it is a triangle. In one part of the triangle, we have people who are enablers, caretakers, and rescuers. The other corner of the triangle, we have people who are persecutors. And at the bottom of the triangle, we have victims. And in the middle, we have drama. So the enabler tends to be, or the caretaker, the rescuer, they tend to be one of the chief, and the enabler and the persecuting role, they kind of zip back and forth, like you could take on either role. But the enabler worries and feels responsible for other people. They feel responsible for the victims. Poor victim feels stressed out. Poor alcoholic. Okay, we'll use that example. The poor person feels really stressed out. and may even feel resentful for having to take care of the victim. Sometimes what happens also, the enabler or caretaker or rescuer actually sometimes feels like a victim themselves. The enabler often makes excuses for the victim, does the work for him or her, bails him or her out of trouble. Oftentimes what happens is the other person then persecutes. Well, I didn't tell you to do that. Who gave you the right to do this? I don't need your help. Okay. There's that being persecuted. The enabler feels persecuted and then takes on the role of the victim. The victim may feel weak, inadequate, helpless, hopeless, feel fearful. Might want support or reassurance. Often avoids taking on risks or responsibilities. Complains of unfair demands and treatment by the critic or the persecutor. One of the ways a victim can get out of the victim role is to look for someone that they can rescue or caretake. See, that's why it's, and so it goes in this triangle. And like I said, the roles all go back and forth. So the victim wants to become the hero. But what happens is once you become the hero, you take on a role of controlling. Because I'm going to tell you what you need to do. And so now I'm persecuting. But you're really angry at me, and now I'm taking on the role of a martyr, and now I'm feeling the victim. So the way to get out of it, you get the picture? That's the Cartman drama triangle. So when we practice this, there is generally some type of drama, some kind of chaos that's going on. The chaos can be in behavior. The chaos can be in emotion. The emotion, I'm angry, I'm frustrating, I'm crying, I'm hurt, I'm shamed. I'm going to shame you. See, I'm the persecutor. I'm going to shame you. All of these roles, the victim, the persecutor, the enabler, all these roles are indications of not being authentic. That's the term that they use, not being authentic. In other words, I'm not being who I really am. I'm being, taking on the role, like an actor, taking on the role of victim. I'm taking on the role of enabler. I'm taking on the role of persecutor. And nothing is solved except chaos is created. And more chaos, and more anger, and more angst. So the Cartman drama triangle is a very good explanation. You can look it up. Cartman with a K. You can Google it and you can look it up. It's a huge aspect of codependency. There's a little story in the Codependent No More book that I like to read to my clients that has a really good illustration that I think is really fantastic. So here's the story. Again, it's The Codependent No More by Melody Beattie. It says, one day a friend wanted me to take her to an apple farm. Originally, I wanted to go. We set a date. By the time that date came, however, I was extremely busy. I called, and instead of telling her that I couldn't go or didn't want to go, I asked to postpone it. I felt guilty and responsible for her feelings. It was a rescue on the way. I couldn't disappoint her because I thought she couldn't handle or be responsible for her own feelings. I couldn't tell her the truth because I thought she might be angry with me. More emotional responsibility on my part, as if someone else's anger is my business. The next weekend rolled around and I squeezed the trip into my even busier schedule. I did not want to go. I didn't even need apples. Before I stopped my car in front of her house, I had already switched into the persecuting role. I seethed with resentment, tense thoughts as we drove to the apple orchard. When we arrived at the apple orchard and began tasting and looking at apples, it became apparent that neither one of us was enjoying herself. After a few minutes, my friend turned to me and said, I really don't want any apples. I brought some last week. I only came because I thought you wanted to come and I didn't want to hurt your feelings. So a rescue does not have to actually even be about I'm taking all the puppies into my home. I mean, that's an obvious rescue. A rescue can look like, oh my gosh, I don't want you to feel bad. The reality is I'm not in control of how you feel. You're in control of how you feel. It's not my goal to disappoint or hurt or harm. That's not my goal. That would be something that I would do with being malicious. It means that I'm taking care of myself, and I hope that we have a good enough friendship or relationship where you understand that I may have some boundaries or some limits, or are there times I may need to say no. So that's kind of how it works. So back to some aspects of codependency. As I was sharing, people with codependency tends to have low self-esteem, toxic shame, very much people-pleasing, poor boundaries, reactive, caretaking. That little story is just about that, caretaking. People who are codependent often have or often struggle with controlling others. And controlling others is not because a codependent wants to control so much as a codependent wants to feel safe. So if I want to feel safe and secure, the best thing to do is try and control the situation, or else I have anxiety, because that's the other aspect. If things don't feel in control, if they feel out of control, there's a lot of anxiety, so I need to control it so I don't have the anxiety, so I feel safe. Now, we all need to have some form of control in our lives. This is true. However, the only control that I really have is I control my behavior. I can control how I react to my emotions. I may even be able to control my emotions. I absolutely have the opportunity to control what I think, because I can change what I think. You know, this morning, I had one of those no breakfast mornings, fast before you go to the doctor to take blood work. Don't you hate that? Oh, gosh, the thing I want more than anything is that first cup of coffee. Instead, I'm at the doctor's office and they're drawing blood out of my arm. Do you see how I just changed my thought? I did it. Changed it. Now I changed it back. Now we're talking about codependency again. I can change my thoughts. You can change your thoughts. I can have negative thoughts. How dumb, stupid, what an idiot I am. What an idiot you are. I can change my thoughts. I'm a good person, a capable person. You're a loving person and a kind person. I have that opportunity. So in terms of control, as a human being, I have a great deal of control over myself. I cannot control what you think and what you feel and how you react and how you respond. I can't do it. I say that to my clients all the time. I'm a therapist, but my job isn't to control how you think or how you feel or what you do. My job is to lay out possibilities of things that you can do and how things might appear differently if you choose to do them differently. Codependents also need to control people that are close to them, because they seem to want to have people behave in a certain way, again, to feel safe. In fact, people pleasing and caretaking can be used to control and manipulate other people. Well, if you really loved me, okay, would be one of the things. Or I'll do that for you if you do this for me. Okay, that type of thing. Quite often, people struggling with codependency have difficulty in communicating thoughts, feelings, and needs. One of the problems is a codependent, you don't really know what your needs are, because you're so busy taking care of other people's needs and looking out for other people's needs. to say, let me stop and figure out what my needs are, is a very difficult challenge for people who are codependent, putting themselves first, taking care of themselves first. I call it the empty glass syndrome. So as a codependent, I'm giving everyone a sip of water out of my glass. And when it comes down to it, there's no water in the glass left for me. And I'm very thirsty. And you still want some of my water. I need to stop and learn how to fill my own glass. Drink from my glass, and if there's some left, I will share it with you. I'm not going to give you all of it. I need to keep from some for myself. So often people say, how in the world do you do what you do, listening to people's problems all day long? Don't you take them home? Doesn't it make you depressed? No, it doesn't, because I don't take it home with me, and I don't give them all the water in my glass. I have to take care of myself first to be able to take care of my clients. I have to take care of myself first before I can hear their problems. One of the things that I learned about being a really good therapist is if I have issues of anger, I need to deal with my own issues of anger so that I can be present for my clients who may be struggling with anger. If I have my own depression, I need to deal with my own depression. If I have my own grief, I need to deal with my own grief. My own shame, my own codependency, I need to be able to deal with all of those things first that are in my life so that I can be present and help my clients. If I am highly codependent, I don't do that. And what may happen is I might say, I don't really want to hear about your grief. I don't want to hear about your anger, because that means I may have to see mine. And therefore, I really can't help you. See how that works? And so one of the problems that often happens is denial. I don't want to see my problem because I'm too busy focused on your problem. And that often happens with codependency. Oftentimes, people struggling with codependency have problems with intimacy, mainly because, again, if you recall, I talked about the Cartman drama triangle. I'm not able to be authentic of taking on the role, being a codependent, an enabler. It's a role. I'm not being who I am. I'm taking on a role of being who I think you want me to be, like a chameleon. Oftentimes, codependents are described as chameleons. If you like green, I like green. Where do you want to go eat? Oh, you want to go to McDonald's and eat? Sure, I'll go to McDonald's. Whatever you want to do, I'll do what you want. I like what you like. I'll be who you want me to be, because I don't want to get you upset. I can't be myself, because if I'm myself, you may not like it. And I can't handle the anxiety, because if you don't like me, you're telling me there's something wrong with me. It pushes on my toxic shame. Yeah, it's just all combined. It's all kind of mashed together. So the intimacy aspects, I'm afraid I'm going to be judged, rejected, abandoned. I might make a mistake. I can't tolerate that. I may feel trapped. I hate being alone. All these are aspects of codependency. And oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, codependency can actually lead to dependency. Sometimes a codependent can become an alcoholic or a drug addict or a shopaholic. They often feel trapped and cornered. They feel they can't function on their own. Or they can't function without someone needing them, because they need to be needed. So I'm going to take another short commercial break, And I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about how we get out of the Cartman drama triangle and how we get out of codependency. I am Ruth Altamirroll, your host for Counselor's Chat, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamirroll, your host for today's program. I'm also a licensed professional counselor, and I'm talking to you today about codependency and the Cartman drama triangle. So one of the stories that I use oftentimes with my clients, I know I read one to you out of the Codependent No More book, but one of the stories that I share with my clients quite often, and it doesn't matter if you are a Christian or not a Christian, it really doesn't matter, because we all know about, you know, being a good Samaritan. We talk about that all the time. Well, the Good Samaritan is out of a story out of the Bible. And I'm just going to give you a short synopsis of the story because I think it's excellent. We talk about the Good Samaritan, okay? So it says, a Jewish man was taking a trip alone and was attacked by robbers. They beat him, robbed him of everything he had, and left him nearly dead beside a road. After a while, a Jewish priest came along and saw the poor man lying beside the road. As a religious man, you would expect him to stop and do what he could to help, but instead he kept going and pretended he did not see. Later, a Levite came along. Levites were assistants to the priest, so you would expect him to stop and help too, but he did just like the priest and kept on going. Finally, a Samaritan came by. Even though they both lived in the same land of Palestine and shared a similar region, the Jews and the Samaritans definitely did not think of each other as neighbors. In fact, they hated each other. The Samaritans came from a different race of people than the Jews, and they considered each other enemies for hundreds of years and refused to even talk to each other, which is really a sad, sad situation. That's my commentary. You would expect the Samaritan then to be just like the others and passed by without helping. Instead, the Samaritan man took pity on the injured Jewish man. He bandaged his wounds, he put him on his own donkey, and he took him to an inn where he could be safe and recover. Since the injured man had been robbed of everything he had, the Samaritan man even paid his bill at the inn and paid the innkeeper to take care of him. So that's the story. So a good Samaritan caretakes other people. They caretake their neighbor. That's one of the main aspects of this. Who is my neighbor? Okay. So a neighbor takes care of someone else who is in need of help. Okay, so my neighbor, need of help, willing to take care of. Now I think the thing that's really important to note about this story when we look at codependency is that the Samaritan didn't take the man home. He took him to an inn. He didn't give him all his money. He gave enough money until the man was well enough to get on his own. He didn't give him his donkey. He didn't give him a job. He just gave him enough to get better and move on. The Samaritan took care of him, but was not a caretaker. And therein lies the difference. The Samaritan also was probably a man of means, had the money to be able to pay the innkeeper for him to get, you know, to supply some clothing and food and bandages and all of those things. He had enough, probably had more than enough, to be able to do that. And he made a choice for himself to do what he wanted with his money to caretake this person. Now, he could have just bandaged him up and left him in the ditch, but he didn't. He went that extra mile, took him to the inn, and paid for whatever was needed for him, so that the innkeeper could take good care of him until he was well enough to be on his own. That is the story of the Good Samaritan. And so we use that story quite often, and we couch it in terms of codependency. Don't you want to be a good Samaritan? Don't you want to take care of your neighbor? Well, yes, absolutely. But we need to have some good boundaries, okay? So that is one of the aspects of this, having some good boundaries. That's one of the things that I like about that story. So I use that story quite often. And just like that, just a story. Doesn't matter where it came from. And so I'm involved in the carbon drama triangle. I've got all this drama going on in my life. I'm caretaking. I have low self-esteem. I don't want to feel anxious. I don't want you to feel bad. And if I refer to the Codependent No More book, I talk about I am attached. Okay. So attachment takes on several forms. It can be excessively worried about or preoccupied with another person or problem, thinking about it all the time. The what ifs. What if this happens? What if that happens? Or we may even become obsessed with and trying to control other people and problems in our environment. So our mental, physical, and emotional energy is directed at the object of our obsession. That's as she calls it. Or we become reactionaries instead of acting authentically of our own volition. There's that word authentically. Our mental, emotional, and physical energy is attached. And we become emotionally dependent on the people around us. Now we're really attached, becoming caretakers, rescuers, and enablers to people around us, firmly attaching ourselves to their need for us. That's what happens. So one of the best ways of dealing with or moving away from being codependent is self-care. And what I mean by self-care isn't just about going and getting a massage or a facial or making sure you're eating clean food and doing those kinds of things. That's good. It also means maybe practicing some tough love. It also means knowing what your boundaries are and what your limits are so that you're able to say no. It means not being a reactionary. It means being a responder. So it talks about in the Codependent No More the way to detach, because detachment is a difficult concept. in many ways, especially if you're struggling with codependency. What does that really mean to detach? Well, detachment does not mean that we don't care. It doesn't mean a cold, hostile withdrawal. It doesn't mean that we accept things the way they are or people the way they are. It doesn't mean that we have a robotic walk through life, oblivious to or unaffected by people or problems. It doesn't mean that we have a Pollyanna-like bliss. It doesn't mean that we shirk our true responsibilities to ourselves and others, because sometimes we are responsible for other people, especially people who are needy. Again, a story of the Good Samaritan, it doesn't mean I take them home with me. Okay, I am very much teach a man to fish and he could eat for the rest of his life. Codependence, give a man a fish. And now you're dependent on me. You need me. I need you to need me to give you fish. Now that works. Sometimes one of the best ways to detach, if the only option you have, is to sever a relationship. And that is sometimes the absolute, when I've tried everything else, that's the only option I have, is to sever a relationship. So detachment, ideally, is about releasing a person or a problem in love. In love. We mentally, emotionally, and sometimes physically disengage ourselves from unhealthy and frequently painful entanglements with another person's life or responsibilities, and from problems which we can't solve. Detachment is based on the premise that each person is responsible for himself and that we can't solve problems that aren't ours to solve, and that worrying about them doesn't help. Again, I'm quoting out of the book. We adopt a policy of keeping our hands off other people's responsibilities and tending to our own instead. If people have created some disaster for themselves, we allow them to face their own proverbial music. We allow people to be who they are. We give them the freedom to be responsible and grow, and we give ourselves that same freedom. So if I'm living with an alcoholic, if I stop enabling them, that means I no longer call the boss and say, oh, he's not feeling well, he can't come into work when he has a hangover. Or he's passed out on the front porch steps after a binge. I don't go out and drag him up to bed. I just let him stay there. Oh, I have anxiety. What will the neighbors think? That's the codependency. I don't know. The detachment is, it really doesn't matter what the neighbors think. He needs to get his act together. That's the tough love. Oh my gosh, my child is out there, scamming for drugs. I got to go rescue them. Well, this is what I say to clients all the time who have that struggle. Anything that's going to lead your child to recovery, do it. Mom, I'm hungry. I need a shower. Okay, I'll come and pick you up and I'll take you to detox. They'll feed you and they'll clean you up. No, I want to come home. Nope, sorry. Tough love. I've been arrested. Okay, why? I'm sitting here in jail. They found drugs and paraphernalia on me and I'm detoxing. Okay, you know, they'll take care of it. They're not going to let you die in jail. They'll take care of it. I'm not going to come and rescue you. You see, one of the ways people, I'm going to continue reading this in a second, a little aside. One of the way people get better is three things. This is what I learned. Emotional pain, physical pain, and economic pain. So when that pain is greater, we will do something about it. If we keep caretaking, rescuing, and enabling, we never allow that pain to get that bad. We prolong the situation. Okay. Back to this, how to detach. Okay. So when I'm working at detaching, I strive to ascertain what it is I can change and what I cannot change. Then I stop trying to change things that I cannot. Okay? So we do whatever we can to try and solve a problem, and when we stop fretting and stewing about it. If we cannot solve a problem and we have done all that we could, we learn to live with it or in spite of that problem. And we learn to live happily, focusing heroically on what is good in our lives and feeling grateful for that. We learn to match the magical lesson that makes the most of what we have. So I make the most of what I have. Take care of myself. Detachment involves present moment living, living in the here and now, allowing life to happen instead of trying to force or control the situation. And we relinquish our regrets over the past and fears about the future, and we make the most of each day. Detachment also involves accepting the reality, the facts. It requires faith in ourselves, in God, in other people, and in the natural order of destiny of things in the world. We believe in the rightness and appropriateness of each moment. We release our burdens and cares and give ourselves the freedom to enjoy life in spite of our unresolved problems. We trust that all is well in spite of the conflicts. We trust that someone greater than ourselves knows and has ordained and cares about what's happening. Detachment doesn't mean that we don't care. It means we do care. And it means that we learn how to love and care and be involved without going crazy. We stop creating all the chaos in our minds and in our environments. And when we're not anxiously and compulsively thrashing about, we become able to make good decisions about how to love and how to solve our problems. We become free to care and to love in ways that help others and don't hurt ourselves. We become free to care and love in ways that help others and don't hurt ourselves. The rewards from detachment are great: serenity, a deep sense of peace, the ability to give and receive love in self-enhancing, energizing ways, the freedom to find real solutions to our problems. We find the freedom to live our own lives without excessive feelings of guilt about or responsibility towards others. And sometimes detachment even motivates and frees people around us to begin to solve their problems. We stop worrying about them, and they pick up the slack and finally start worrying about themselves. What a grand plan. We each mind our own business. That's detachment. Detachment is key in combating codependency. I put the oxygen mask on myself first. Now, oftentimes, I draw a picture for my clients. One side I have the word codependency. On the other side I have selfish. In the middle I put balance and self-care. If I am codependent and I'm moving towards the word selfish because I want to go towards balance and self-care, I feel guilty. It's a consequence. Feeling guilty is uncomfortable. It produces anxiety. I need to learn to tolerate that and get to the point where I'm taking care of myself so I can take care of someone else. It's not about being selfish. It's about self-care. So yes, that means sometimes I have to put myself first, take care of myself first. I can't take in all the stray puppies. I can't do it. I don't know what diseases they have. I don't know what's going on. I would rather go to the shelter, okay? I'd rather go to the shelter who has taken in this. Even if I find the puppies, I will take them to the shelter. The shelter will give them, you know the term vetting? That's exactly where the term comes from. We take them to the vet. The vet looks them over, checks that they're okay, and then says, this puppy's up for adoption. That's vetting.